Chapter 13. The Offering of Isaac. Test of Faith. This chapter is based on Genesis 16, 17, 18-20, 21, 1-14, 22, 1-19. Abraham had accepted the promise of a son, but did not wait for God to fulfill his word in his own time and way. A delay was permitted to test his faith, but he failed to endure the trial. In her old age, Sarah suggested, as a plan by which the divine purpose might be fulfilled, that one of her handmaidens be taken by Abraham as a secondary wife. Polygamy had ceased to be regarded as a sin, but was a violation of the law of God, and was fatal to the sacredness and peace of the family. Abraham's marriage with Hagar resulted in evil, not only to his own household, but to future generations. Flattered with her new position as Abraham's wife, and hoping to be the mother of the great nation to descend from him, Hagar became proud. Mutual jealousies disturbed the peace of the once happy home. Forced to listen to the complaints of both, Abraham vainly endeavored to restore harmony. Though it was at Sarah's entreaty that he had married Hagar, she now reproached him as the one at fault. She desired to banish her rival. But Abraham refused to permit this, for Hagar was to be the mother of his child, as he fondly hoped, the son of promise. She was Sarah's servant, however, and he still left her to the control of her mistress. When Sarai dealt hardly with her, she fled from her face. She made her way to the desert, and as she rested beside a fountain, lonely and friendless, an angel appeared. Addressing her as Hagar, Sarai's maid, he bade her, "Return to thy mistress, and submit thyself under her hands." Yet with the reproof were mingled words of comfort. "The Lord hath heard thy affliction. I will multiply thy seed exceedingly, that it shall not be numbered for multitude." She was bidden to call her child Ishmael, "God shall hear." When Abraham was nearly 100 years old, the promise of a son was repeated. "Sarah thy wife shall bear thee a son indeed, and thou shalt call his name Isaac, and I will establish my covenant with him. As for Ishmael," he said, "behold, I have blessed him, and I will make him a great nation." Polygamy brings sorrow. The birth of Isaac filled the tents of Abraham and Sarah with gladness, but to Hagar this event was the overthrow of her fondly cherished ambitions. Ishmael had been regarded by all as the heir of Abraham's wealth and the inheritor of the blessings promised his descendants. Now he was suddenly set aside. Mother and son hated the child of Sarah. The general rejoicing increased their jealousy, until Ishmael dared openly to mock the heir of God's promise. Sarah saw in Ishmael's turbulent disposition a perpetual source of discord, and she appealed to Abraham that Hagar and Ishmael be sent away. The patriarch was thrown into great distress. How could he banish Ishmael, his son, still dearly beloved? In his perplexity, he pleaded for divine guidance. Through a holy angel, the Lord directed him to grant Sarah's desire. Only thus could he restore harmony and happiness to his family. The angel gave him the promise that Ishmael would not be forsaken by God, and he would become the father of a great nation. Abraham obeyed, but not without keen suffering. The father's heart was heavy as he sent away Hagar and his son. The sacredness of the marriage relation was to be a lesson for all ages. The rights and happiness of this relation are to be carefully guarded, even at great sacrifice. Sarah was the only true wife of Abraham. Her rights no other person was entitled to share. She was unwilling that Abraham's affections should be given to another, and the Lord did not reprove her for requiring the banishment of her rival. An example for all generations. Abraham was to stand as an example of faith to succeeding generations. But his faith had not been perfect. He had shown distrust of God in his marriage with Hagar. That he might reach the highest standard, God subjected him to another test, the closest which man was ever asked to endure. In a vision of the night, he was directed to offer his son as a burnt offering upon a mountain that should be shown him. Abraham had reached the age of 120 years. The ardor of youth had passed. One in the vigor of manhood may with courage meet difficulties and afflictions that would cause his heart to fail later in life. But God had reserved his most trying test for Abraham until the burden of years was heavy upon him and he longed for rest. The patriarch was very rich and was honored as a mighty prince by the rulers of the land. Heaven seemed to have crowned with blessing a life of sacrifice and patient endurance. Abraham commanded to offer Isaac. In the obedience of faith, Abraham had forsaken his native country and had wandered as a stranger in the land of his inheritance. He had waited long for the birth of the promised heir. At the command of God, he had sent away Ishmael, and now, when the patriarch seemed able to discern the fruition of his hopes, a trial greater than all others was before him. The command must have wrung with anguish that father's heart. Take now thy son, thine only son Isaac, whom thou lovest, and offer him there for a burnt offering. Isaac was the light of his home, the solace of his old age, the inheritor of the promised blessing. But he was commanded to shed the blood of that son with his own hand. It seemed a fearful impossibility. Satan was at hand to suggest that he must be deceived, for the divine law commands, "Thou shalt not kill." God would not require what he had forbidden. Going outside his tent, Abraham recalled the promise that his seed should be as innumerable as the stars. If this promise was to be fulfilled through Isaac, how could he be put to death? Abraham bowed upon the earth and prayed as he had never prayed before, for some confirmation of the command if he must perform this terrible duty. He remembered the angels sent to reveal God's purpose to destroy Sodom, and who bore to him the promise of this same son Isaac. He went to the place where he had met the heavenly messengers, hoping to receive some further direction, but none came. The command of God was sounding in his ears. Take now thy son, thine only son Isaac, whom thou lovest. That command must be obeyed. Day was approaching, and he must be on his journey. Isaac lay sleeping the untroubled sleep of youth and innocence. For a moment the father looked upon the dear face of his son, then turned tremblingly away. He went to Sarah, who was also sleeping. Should he awaken her? He longed to unburden his heart to her and share with her this terrible responsibility, but he was restrained. Isaac was her joy and pride. The mother's love might refuse the sacrifice. 3 sad days. Abraham at last summoned his son, telling him of the command to offer sacrifice on a distant mountain. Isaac had often gone with his father to worship, and this excited no surprise. The wood was made ready and put upon the ass, and with 2 servants they set forth. Father and son journeyed in silence, the patriarch pondering his heavy secret. His thoughts were of the proud, fond mother, and the day when he should return to her alone. He knew that the knife would pierce her heart when it took the life of her son. That day, the longest Abraham had ever experienced, dragged slowly to its close. He spent the night in prayer, still hoping that some heavenly messenger might say that the youth might return unharmed to his mother. But no relief came to his tortured soul. Another long day. Another night of humiliation and prayer. The command that was to leave him childless was ringing in his ears. Satan was near to whisper doubts and unbelief, but Abraham resisted his suggestions. As they were about to begin the journey of the third day, the patriarch saw the promised sign, a cloud of glory hovering over Mount Moriah. He knew that the voice which had spoken was from heaven. Even now he did not murmur against God. This son had been unexpectedly given. Had not he who bestowed the precious gift a right to recall his own? Then faith repeated the promise. In Isaac shall thy seed be called, a seed numberless as the grains of sand upon the shore. Isaac was the child of a miracle, and could not the power that gave him life restore it? Abraham grasped the divine word, accounting that God was able to raise him up, even from the dead. Hebrews 11, verse 19. Yet none but God could understand how great was the Father's sacrifice in yielding up his son to death. Abraham desired that none but God should witness the parting scene. He bade his servants remain behind, saying, "I and the lad will go yonder and worship, and come again to you." The wood was laid upon Isaac. The father took a knife and the fire, and together they ascended toward the mountain summit. The young man at last spoke, "My father, behold the fire and the wood, but where is the lamb for a burnt offering?" What a test was this! How the endearing words, "My father," pierced Abraham's heart. Not yet, he could not tell him now. "My son," he said, "God will provide himself a lamb for a burnt offering." At the appointed place they built the altar and laid the wood upon it. Then, with trembling voice, Abraham unfolded the divine message. Trained to obey. With terror and amazement, Isaac learned his fate, but he offered no resistance. He could have escaped had he chosen. The old man, exhausted with the struggle of those three terrible days, could not have opposed the will of the vigorous youth. But Isaac had been trained from childhood to ready obedience, and as the purpose of God was opened before him, he yielded a willing submission. He was a sharer in Abraham's faith, and he felt honored in being called to give his life as an offering to God. And now the last words of love were spoken, the last tears shed, the last embrace given. The father lifted the knife. Suddenly, an angel of God called out of heaven, "Abraham, Abraham!" He quickly answered, "Here am I." Again the voice was heard, "Lay not thine hand upon the lad, neither do thou anything unto him, for now I know that thou fearest God, seeing thou hast not withheld thy son, thine only son, from me." Then Abraham saw a ram caught in a thicket, and quickly he offered it in the stead of his son. In his joy and gratitude, Abraham gave a new name to the sacred spot, Jehovah Jireh, the Lord will provide. The promise to Abraham repeated. On Mount Moriah, God again confirmed with solemn oath the blessing to Abraham and to his seed. "Because thou hast done this thing, and hast not withheld thy son, thine only son, in blessing I will bless thee, and in multiplying I will multiply thy seed as the stars of the heaven, and as the sand which is upon the seashore. And thy seed shall possess the gate of his enemies, and in thy seed shall all the nations of the earth be blessed, because thou hast obeyed my voice." Abraham's great act of faith stands like a pillar of light, illuminating the pathway of God's servants in all succeeding ages. During that 3 days' journey, Abraham had sufficient time to reason and to doubt God. He might have reasoned that the slaying of his son would cause him to be looked upon as a murderer, a second Cain. It would cause his teaching to be rejected and despised, and thus destroy his power to do good to his fellow men. He might have pleaded that age should excuse him from obedience. But the patriarch did not take refuge in excuses. Abraham was human. His passions and attachments were like ours, but he did not stay to reason with his aching heart. He knew that God is just and righteous in all his requirements. Abraham believed God, and it was imputed unto him for righteousness, and he was called the friend of God. James 2, verse 23. And Paul says, "They which are of faith, the same are the children of Abraham." Galatians 3, verse 7. But Abraham's faith was made manifest by his works. Was not Abraham our father justified by works when he had offered Isaac his son upon the altar? Seest thou how faith wrought with his works, and by works was faith made perfect? James 2, verse 21-22. Many fail to understand the relation of faith and works. They say, "Only believe in Christ and you are safe. You have nothing to do with keeping the law." But genuine faith will be manifest in obedience. Concerning the father of the faithful, the Lord declares, "Abraham obeyed my voice and kept my charge, my commandments, my statutes, and my laws." Genesis 26, verse 5. Says the Apostle James, "Faith, if it hath not works, is dead, being alone." James 2, verse 17. And John, who dwells so fully upon love, tells us, "This is the love of God, that we keep his commandments." 1 John 5, verse 3. God preached before the gospel unto Abraham, Galatians 3, verse 8. And the patriarch's faith was fixed upon the Redeemer to come. Said Christ, "Your father Abraham rejoiced that he should see my day, and he saw it, and was glad." John 8, verse 56. The ram offered in place of Isaac represented the Son of God, who was to be sacrificed in our stead. The Father, looking upon his Son, said to the sinner, "Live, I have found a ransom." The agony which Abraham endured during the dark days of that fearful trial was permitted that he might understand something of the greatness of the sacrifice made by God for man's redemption. No other test could have caused Abraham such torture of soul as did the offering of his Son. God gave his Son to a death of agony and shame. The angels were not permitted to interpose, as in the case of Isaac. There was no voice to cry, "It is enough." To save the fallen race, the King of Glory yielded up his life. "He that spared not his own Son, but delivered him up for us all, how shall he not with him also freely give us all things?" Romans 8, verse 32. Lesson Book of the Universe. The sacrifice required of Abraham was not alone for his good, nor for succeeding generations. It was also for the instruction of the sinless intelligences of heaven and other worlds. The field on which the plan of redemption is wrought out is the lesson book of the universe. Because Abraham had shown a lack of faith, Satan had accused him before angels and God. God desired to prove the loyalty of his servant before all heaven, to demonstrate that nothing less than perfect obedience can be accepted, and to open more fully before them the plan of salvation. The trial brought upon Adam involved no suffering, but the command to Abraham demanded the most agonizing sacrifice. All heaven beheld with wonder and admiration Abraham's unfaltering obedience. All heaven applauded his fidelity. Satan's accusations were shown to be false. God's covenant testified that obedience will be rewarded. When the command was given Abraham to offer his son, all heavenly beings, with intense earnestness, watched each step in the fulfillment of this command. Light was shed upon the mystery of redemption, and even the angels understood more clearly the wonderful provision that God had made for man's salvation. See 1 Peter 1, verse 12.